Hi, I'm Laura.
And I'm Shelley.
And together we co-host a podcast called Crime Scene Queens, which goes beyond the who, what, when, where, and why of true crime.
We are forensic professionals here to cure you of that CSI effect.
Expect unfiltered, fact-based banters about true stories from the field as we catch up and discuss autopsies,
fingerprints,
blood spatter,
degloving,
adipose sear, and more terms you may or may not be familiar with.
So follow us, Crime Scene Queens, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts.
Marbling.
Trajectory.
How to properly cut down a hangman's noose.
Trace evidence.
You're so vanilla after mine. Trace evidence. Cyanoacrylate fuming.
AKA super glue fuming.
I know, bitch.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of From the Vault. I'm Jason Futch, and thank you for joining us for the conclusion to our conversation with Detective William Springer of the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office. In this short, but very important episode, we talk about the recent identification of a long-term Jane Doe case where human remains of a female were found on Singer Island in 1974. This was also a case we covered on the previous show, True Cold Case Files, where our co-host, Nick Wagler, debuted on our program. Earlier this year, those remains were identified as those of Suzanne Gale Poole, a 15-year-old female from Palm Beach County. She was identified with the help of Othram, a breakthrough company that has been on the forefront of assisting law enforcement with the identification of suspects in long-term cold cases, as well as the identification of unidentified persons, including Suzanne. In this final segment of the series, we go into some never-released details regarding the case, including touching up on the original suspect, Terry Wayne Walker of Michigan. We also dive into why he has since been ruled out and replaced by Florida serial killer Gerard Schaefer, a former law enforcement officer who was charged with murdering multiple females and has been suspected of more crimes. We will go ahead and present part two of our conversation with Detective Springer. But before we do, please make sure to give us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know how we are doing and how we can make this series better. Please join us on our next episode as Nick Wagler returns to the air and we speak with crime scene expert Laura Zinn, who has been an experienced CSI for over a decade. We talk about her career and also her new podcast, Crime Scene Queens, out now wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Enjoy the show. The Christy Luna case is definitely one of those cases that has stuck in my memory. I mean, and for me, it stuck in my memory, but for you, you lived through that. You lived that case. And then there's another case here that you just recently helped assist in solving. That was the Suzanne Poole case out of the Singer Island area. And I remember we covered this case as well. In fact, a little footnote here, when we covered this case, it was actually my co-host Nick Wagler's first ever episode that we covered. And we had dug a lot of the information up from newspapers and stuff like that. And one of the names that popped up was Emilio Diamantis, the original investigator in this case. I had the pleasure of being able to speak with him recently and hearing his thoughts about his part of the investigation, about going up to Michigan and talking to Terry Wayne Walker and stuff like that. But when you picked up this investigation, how did you handle it? Because I know this was before you came into PBSO. How did you handle this particular case, considering how old it was?
One of my analysts, Kara Bannon, said, you know, we have an unidentified. Mm-hmm. So we opened it up and we looked at it. And when I looked at it, the physical evidence, where she was located and everything, really pointed to Gerard Schaefer. Mm-hmm. I read their report. They never ID'd the girl. I'm a cold case guy and I'm not judging the original guys. Okay. Because when I look at some of my old cases that aren't solved, I think, well, boy, you missed that. Boy, that was awful stupid. You know, so, you know, hindsight's 20/20. It's like a football game. I can sit here and say, well, why didn't he pass it to this guy instead of passing it to that guy?
Okay? Exactly.
So, I don't Monday morning quarterback. Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
I looked at the investigation. I saw their investigation. I saw where they went and they interviewed the guy. And at this point, we don't know who the girl is.
Right.
So they could have been 100% right. I mean, when you looked at the physical evidence, it really, it didn't match what he was saying or anything. But then again, you know, that's my opinion. Okay.
Yeah. And well, I remember too, when I was reading in the articles, that was the conclusion, was that ultimately this Jane Doe was not Bonnie Robinson because of the feelings in the teeth, I believe. I think they were not the same size as Bonnie's. And so they ended up having to rule Terry Wayne Walker out. But I just remember in some of the messages that I had exchanged with Detective Diamantis.
They actually exceptionally cleared it with him as a suspect. When I looked at it, you know, we had it. So we tried to get DNA. We sent her everything. I won't say what we did, but anyway, we sent stuff off to the University of North Texas. They weren't able to get DNA. Then they sent it to the Army serology lab that's been getting DNA from, you know, soldiers from Second World War and stuff. So they got some DNA and we put it all in the system and we never got a match. Nothing. And, you know, when you look at a young girl, you think somebody's got to be missing them. But like I said, people went missing back in the 70s and the 60s and even the 80s. And if the families didn't keep on the detectives or the police department, they forgot about it. The original detectives retire, they go away, you know, they transfer, they do this, they're gone. And nobody realizes that Betty Jones is still missing and is now dropped out of NCIC and everything because nobody's followed up on it.
Right.
So anyway, we did that. And then I get a call from Othram and they said, you know, they're having great success. And do I have any cases that I'd be interested in? And the first thing I thought about was her, because I mean, I'm thinking, well, she'd be a good test case. She's 1974. She's definitely, you know, got degraded DNA. So anyway, when they said that, I said, you know, sounds like, yeah. So they gave me a price. And like I said, I have a very good sheriff's office. I went in and I said to my supervisor, this is what I need. And this is how much money I need. He came back, he said, do it. So I did it. I sent it, I think, in December, March. I get a phone call. They tell me, we're going to send you an email with all the information. They sent me an email with the mother's name, date of birth, and all her siblings.
Wow.
I thought, you got to be kidding me. So I researched. I found a brother. I called a brother up. I got a number. I called him up. And I said, have you got any missing family members? He said, yeah, my sister disappeared in 1972.
Oh.
I knew the mother was probably still alive, but I didn't want to go to the mother because she was 90 years old.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to knock on her door and say, hey, you know. So,
oh my goodness.
So then, you know, I talked to the mother and she said, yeah, I reported her missing back then, but they listed her as a runaway. It just went poof.
Wow. So I do have a quick question on that, you know, regarding, again, I guess going back to Walker, after you guys identified Suzanne Poole, did y'all follow up with Terry Wayne Walker on Suzanne?
Yeah.
You did? And what was his response?
Well, okay, you got to realize that Terry Wayne Walker is telling the detectives that he killed this girl in 1974.
Right.
Okay. Which doesn't really match up to me with the physical evidence and the deterioration of everything. I'm an amateur, except, you know, I've worked this for a long time, but I'm still an amateur. So, you know, I'm looking at it from my perspective, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, that doesn't fit. And then if you listen to his story, he says that he hitchhiked with this girl from Daytona to Miami, and they partied, and they were going back to Daytona. Well, you got to visualize Florida in 1974. There's no I-95. The turnpike is way out west.
Yep.
The only way to get from Daytona to Miami is on US-1.
US-1.
Because A1A doesn't run straight down because it stops at all the inlets. And if you want to go, then you got to go over to US-1 and back around.
Yep.
So she's on A1A. She's not on US-1.
Right.
So you'd have to think, well, how does he get up from Miami? How does he, well, first of all, how does he manage to hitchhike all the way from Daytona down to Miami? Unless he gets a ride all the way.
Right.
Which he could have. I'm not saying he couldn't. and then be able to party all day and then hitchhike back up and end up on A1A.
Yeah. I mean, and even the bigger question too is how the hell did he get there from Michigan of all places too?
He was living in Daytona.
Oh, so he was living in Daytona at the time.
Oh, yeah. He was living in Daytona at the time.
Okay.
And yeah, he was in Daytona. Mm-hmm. And allegedly the girl that he murdered or worked at McDonald's, I think, back then.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
And McDonald's told the detectives that they wouldn't hire anybody without their parents' signature and records from the school or whatever. I don't
remember. Right, right.
So anyway, when you look at the physical evidence that was at the scene and where she's located, it fits Gerard Schaefer. So then, boom, when we get her ID, by God, where's she from? Right down there where Gerard Schaefer is. And not only that, she was staying on and off with a guy in Wilton Manors where Schaefer was a cop.
Oh, my word.
So since I can't prosecute him, I might as well, I'll give you another little tidbit. The trailer park she lived in, one of the other victims of Schaefer lived in that trailer park.
Whoa.
So, I mean, you know, it pretty well points right to him. I mean, whether, you know, I still have work to do on it, and I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's an interesting case. And like I said, you know, I don't do Monday morning quarterbacking. That's not my job. My job is to investigate and find out what happened. And that's what I want to do. And I was just happy. And, you know, we got her back. Her sister really wanted her back. So we got her back to her sister. And she's very happy. And the family knows what happened. Because all these years, they didn't know. She just said, you know, I don't want to be part of the family anymore. Or what, you know? You just don't know. And that's what I'm saying, you know? They got all these questions all these years, and at least now they have an answer.
Wow. So that's insane, because a lot of people in our, you know, I guess in the community after the Singer Island Jane Doe identification was wondering, well, I mean, there's nothing pinpointing Schaefer, but then now that you're sharing this information, it's like, all right. Yeah, I think we're on to something here. So this is, wow. I appreciate you sharing that information.
Yeah, well, if I was able to prosecute Schaefer, I wouldn't have shared that. But since I can't do anything to him, I mean, you know, it's kind of a moot point. That
sure, absolutely.
Trust me, if I could prosecute him, I would definitely do my best to prosecute him, because the terror that he put these girls through. I mean, that guy really, I mean, I don't know if you read the books or if you know anything about him, but when you start reading some of the things that he wrote about, that he said, well, he said, I'm just writing about him. I didn't do him.
Yeah.
But when you read, I have some investigative stuff that I've been reading. I mean, he's definitely a scary person.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine the terror and the pain that these poor girls went through.
And you know what's interesting too, Detective, is that when we did the episode on Singer Island Jane Doe, I think since we've removed it because we were going through the brand change, but when we talked about Singer Island Jane Doe, we did actually talk about Gerard Schaefer in that episode when we were talking about, you know, he was a typical serial killer who, you know, groomed his victims, killed them, and he would keep souvenirs, if I remember right, in a steamer trunk, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I remember we had talked about that too. And then now, you know, we sit here a couple of years after the fact and all avenues point to Gerard Schaefer. Yeah, like that to me is like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, this guy definitely, if you read some of the stuff, I mean, he's definitely got, he's a very violent, vicious person.
In that regard, though, so now that you've wrapped up the identification portion of this case, now you're doing the death investigation. What exactly are you looking for now in this regard? What is your main focus in the death investigation part besides, you know, Schaefer?
My thing was, she was murdered. I'm trying to determine who murdered her. You just can't say, well, geez, I think it was Schaefer. You have to have more than I think it was Schaefer. You look at the physical evidence that left at the scene, it kind of points to Schaefer, his MO. Now that you find the fact out that back in 74, they found her, they didn't know who she was, so they didn't know she was from Fort Lauderdale. So they're at a big disadvantage as far as that goes. I've got the advantage because I know where she's from now. I've got a starting point. Back in 74, they had no starting point. But I got a starting point And I know that she lived within the same proximity where Schaefer lived. I know that he had access to that area because that's where he's picking up the girls.
Right.
He's bringing them north. I don't know how far you followed Schaefer, but there was one of his victims identified by BSO that was found in our county down in Boca del Mar. Of course, he has all the way up on Hutchinson Island, almost into the city of Fort Pierce.
Wow.
Actually, just down the road from where I live.
Wow.
But I mean, you know, so he uses the mangroves. He's using A1A. Mm. So, I mean, he's got a pattern. He deviates from that pattern. Because if you read stuff, he even says, I'll change this so they don't see the MO. I'll change this so they don't see the MO. I'll pull teeth out so that they can't identify them. I'll cut their heads off. I mean, this guy just goes through different things. And then, you know, he's just a strange thing. And of course, there's, I don't know how many books out on him now. You know, everybody's
there's quite a out few
writing sure. books.
So I do have a little bit of a question. Jason, you did mention that this guy did have souvenirs at one point in time.
Yeah, he kept a steamer trunk.
Is there any possibility, do you think? So like the department has the souvenirs, I am assuming, or at least is knowledgeable enough of them. Is there any possibility of ever connecting one of these quote unquote souvenirs to Suzanne?
The only thing I'll tell you at this point, it's an ongoing investigation at this point.
And there you go.
That'll be another chapter.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, this is definitely going to be one of those cases we're going to be paying attention to very closely. And we definitely want to get you back on the show for a follow-up on that as well once everything, you know, settles down and stuff. So. But yeah, like the Singer Island Jane Doe is just one of those cases that has stuck with me, especially as a Floridian who once lived on the Florida coast, because I actually lived on the northern terminus of A1A at one time in Fernandina Beach, Florida. So
I will answer you one more question. You asked if we talked to Terry Wayne Walker.
Yes.
Well, yes, we did.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't remember any statements.
Oh, so he got amnesia.
Well, you know, in his defense, they were doing drugs. And the problem is that, and that's the big defense for a lot of people. Well, you know, I was doing drugs back then. I don't remember much of nothing.
Right.
Whether he doesn't remember, I don't know.
Yeah, because I know I did a little bit of a follow-up on him in present day. If I remember right, he's now out on parole.
Is that
correct? Mm-hmm. Yes, because they had suspected him of also murdering someone in Indiana at one point, too. So
well, that's where he was. He got arrested in Indiana and he was in parole. He got paroled out of Indiana and he transferred his parole over to Michigan.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, all I can say, too, I mean, I don't know the story behind the murder case because I know he had been accused of Bonnie's murder, but or disappearance rather. But I mean, yeah. Now,
I think the woman he murdered in Indiana, he shot.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I say, back in the day, I mean, even his own statements, he was high.
Yeah.
And I think even in the reports mentioned about him being high. So I don't, you know, whether he remembers it or not, I don't know.
Absolutely. And
if he does, he's not going to say anything to me about it. He's going to deny it right down to the end of the line. He said, I don't remember saying anything. I said, you don't remember talking? No. I said, I don't remember talking to anybody.
Because at this point, too, I guess you got to consider, too, you know, this is his first time. And since the 1970s, he's been able to live his life. So he ain't going to ruin that.
Well, I don't think he has much of a life, but he's out there.
Yeah, that's the scary part.
Yeah. You know, when you're in prison your whole life like him, when you get out, he's got nothing. So, you know.
I mean, short of, you know, if he had parents that are still alive or something.
Yeah, I doubt it because he's pretty old himself. Yeah. He's not a spring chicken either. So
for sure. But yeah, I mean, I appreciate you coming on and, you know, talking with us about Singer Isla and Christie and enlightening us with the Spearman case too. Is there anything, any other cases that have been on your mind that you want to talk about? Or
there's one more that I'd like to bring up. Is Randy Gorenberg.
Mm-hmm.
That's my case. And she was at the Town Center Mall in Boca on March 23rd, 2007. She had a black Mercedes SUV, the full-size SUV. And she did some shopping in the mall, left the mall around 1:16 in the afternoon. Next thing, we get a call around 1:54 of a woman being thrown out of a SUV at the Civic Center across from Moore Comic Park. We believe that she was taken out of the town center mall, taken someplace. She had been assaulted, not sexually assaulted, but assaulted. Sure. Her shoes are gone. Her pocketbook was gone. Her cell phone and everything. I believe she went, the guy took her someplace else. She did not, her and her husband, did not have debit cards. They used credit cards. And the reason they used credit cards was because he got airline miles.
Ah, okay.
So they purchased everything with their credit cards for the airline miles. And if they needed cash, they would write a check out at the bank. So everything was purchased with the credit cards. I'm imagining that this guy now has taken Randy, thinking he's got a high-end car. It's 2007. Everybody's got a debit card. Mm-hmm. And she don't have a debit card. Where he was, the area where he was taking her was where her bank was. But he pulled in, and I think she was resisting. I think she was trying to get out, and he shot.
Wow.
And left her laying on the pavement. He took the SUV, drove up to the Home Depot, which was right up the road, mm-hmm. went around back, got out, and gone.
And did this happen in daylight?
Daylight.
Oh,
1:16 in the afternoon, and
wow,
was murdered at 1:54.
Wow, that's like Russell Foote's case.
Now, there's two other cases from the town center mall that are in Boca's jurisdiction. The only thing I'm going to tell you, I really can't discuss their cases because it's their cases.
Sure.
Do I think that they could all be connected? Very possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have three women carjacked out of the parking lot.
Right.
One in March, one in September, and one in December. Randy was killed. The one in between obeyed everything, followed all the instructions, wasn't killed. Petichio's, for some reason, he killed. I don't know. Anyway, that's Boca's cases. So wow. I really don't want to go into them. But yeah, I'd like to get Randy's solved.
Absolutely. And I think in the future, we may do an episode on Randy. So
yeah, because her mother is a sweetheart. She's 90-some years old, Heidi. God bless her. I just, you know, she really, you know, has never got over it.
Wow.
Never got over it.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep in touch in regards to Randy, because I'll definitely want to cover that case too. So, and we'll get deep into it, and we'll make sure that Randy, along with these cases that we cover tonight, you know, they're definitely not forgotten. But I do want to go over some quick questions for you real fast before we end it, though. Let me ask you this, because, and we kind of already touched up on it, where do you see technology going in the future when it comes to crime fighting? Do you believe that, you know, forensic genetic genealogy is indeed the future, just like DNA was in the 80s?
Yes, I do. I think it's going to be a big, big thing. Yeah, I really do, because it seems like that's the direction it's going, and I'm hoping that it gets better. I mean, we're still going to do DNA, regular DNA.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Because of the new technology. I know the sheriff's office got this rapid DNA equipment. Mm-hmm. I don't know. All right. Like I said, I don't understand all of it, but, you know, I guess they can do DNA, get it back right away. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like NCIS and them shows that I don't watch, you know, where they go to the crime scene, they get something, they take it in, and the crime scene guy does the serology, and he says, I got a match. And I'm thinking, boy, that's really good. But, you know, in reality, that doesn't happen. But I think it's getting to that point. I mean, where you get a piece of evidence and you take it to the lab and they can do it and say, boom. But then you got to realize, too, there's only so many cases they can do at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So if they got 20 cases backed up, unless it's a new homicide, you know, new homicides take precedent.
Sure.
Because, you know, and that's understandable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you got a new homicide, you want to get it solved. And, you know, they kind of move up to the front of the line.
Oh, absolutely. And so, I agree with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, that's life. I mean, I can't say, well, geez, mine's more important than yours.
Sure.
But, you know,
understandable.
Say, well, mine's more important than yours. And it isn't, you know. So, you know, if they got a new homicide, I expect that. If I was working a new homicide, I would think, you know, put it up front. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, we just have to wait. But, you know, but I think that eventually, you know, and as all these labs out there, private labs get more specialized. And then people aren't stupid. I mean, you know, they're figuring out how to do stuff with nanograms of DNA.
Wow.
Nanograms.
that's wild.
And you think, holy mackerel. But, you know, and then they're specializing like Othram, Asteria, all of them. They're getting specialized. So if you need this done, you go to this lab. If you need that done, you go to this lab. So in the future, if I was a criminal, you know what I'd be doing right now? I'd be thinking, where did I screw up? What did I leave behind?
That's what I'm saying.
Every time they knock at the door, you're thinking, uh-oh, did they catch me? Are they coming for me? Did I leave a hair there? What did I leave?
Hell, even today, I mean, even if you're innocent for the crime, you wonder, I walked by there an hour ago spitting a piece of bubble gum out. I hope I'm not going to be in trouble for this.
Well, you know, but, you know, some of the evidence, you're right. We pick up a cigarette butt. We know that that could be the bad guy, but then again, it couldn't. So
circumstantial.
Yeah, you can't go with. But I mean, you know, if you got, you know, like I said, if you're in there in that guy's house, you're shedding hair, you're touching stuff, buddy, you know. And like I say, with nanograms.
It's just insane because, see, I'm a big history buff when it comes to like some of the local law enforcement stuff in Florida. And I love reading the archives of the Florida Sheriff's Star and the old Florida Sheriff's bulletins. And
you really went back.
I love that. Like, I love it because it helps me with the local history of our sheriff's office here and going back to like Sheriff Ralph Witt and stuff. And I got this magazine. It was a cover with Walter Matthau. He did a television show based on the Florida Sheriff's Bureau before it was FDLE. And I just remember watched a little clip of the pilot episode. And I'm just like, man, even in the 1957, I think it was, it came out. It's like, man, they were still pretty innovative for that time. But man, you know, just to think some of the stuff, if we had technology then, the stuff that we have now, just imagine, just do you think Florida would be like, we would be almost no crime here?
If we'd had that back in the day. But you know what they do now?
What's that?
They go out and get every camera they can find. Everybody's got a camera. Ring cameras, garage cameras, you name it. They go up and down the street and collect all that video. And before you know it, they got the car, they got everything right on video.
Oh, yeah. And there's a cold case here in Lake City right now. It was a woman, she was murdered while working the night shift at the convenience store. Her name was Linda Rollerson. It happened in 2008. The camera, despite the fact that it was, you know, a really crappy camera, they still were able to get an idea of what this guy looks like. And the car that he drove. And there was a camera across the street at the S&S food store that caught him leaving the store and going eastbound toward Jacksonville. They still haven't caught the guy, but they have an idea who it is now. They just need the probable cause. So that one, and if it wasn't for a previous store robbery murder, I don't know if we would have even had a visual on the car, because when this woman was abducted from the store in 1989, there were no convenience store safety laws. So when the county passed their laws, you could not have obstructions on the window, no posters, nothing like that. So because of that law, they were able to catch that car and have an idea what the suspect drove. So it's just amazing, you know, over time, how technology has changed and how amazing it looks for the future.
Well, everybody's got a camera in their hand now.
Yes, everybody. So one other question for you. What advice would you give future generations of investigators going forward?
Just keep an open mind. I mean, you know, you got to keep an open mind. I don't know what to tell. You know, an open mind and, you know, just keep working and never give up. You never give up. That's one thing. You never say, I give up. Yeah, you may hit that brick wall, and you don't know how many brick walls I've hit. You know, I just back up and keep trying to move forward, you know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, and that's what I mean. I'm hoping that somebody out there will come forward with Christy Luna, Rachel Hurley, Randy Gorenberg. And if anybody knows anything about Susan Poole, I'll take that too. And like I said, if you can solve any of my cases, you're welcome to solve them. And I'll give you credit all the way down the road.
Well, don't tell us that, because we're really going to take that at face value. So
I will, buddy. Trust me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have case files stacked up the wazoo on Dropbox right now, and so does Gwen. So we'll take one more.
Exactly. Okay.
But anyways, any final thoughts, Detective Springer, before we let you go?
No. You sure kept me long enough. I was planning on an hour and a half, and here it's been three.
Yeah, it happens. I get carried away easily.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, I got to get up and go to work in the morning. I may be retired, but I'm still working.
Absolutely. Well, you got to go do you, brother, and we'll let you have at it. Good luck out there. Keep doing the Lord's work, and we'll see you on another episode of From the Vault.
Thank you again for joining us on this episode of From the Vault, a true crime podcast. We will see you on the next episode as we talk with Laura Zinn, a professional CSI investigator, who will be talking about her career and also a little bit more about her podcast, Crime Scene Queens, which is available now wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. On behalf of Gwen Berenger, I'm Jason Futch. Thank you all for joining us on this episode of From the Vault. We'll see you again soon. From the Vault, a true crime podcast, is a production of JPF Productions. This episode was written and directed by Jason Futch and co-hosted by Gwen Berenger. Please be sure to listen to her podcast, A Light for Erica, available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Special thanks to the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office, Public Information Officer Terry Barbera, and a very special thanks to Detective William Springer. Our theme song is Sinister by Anno Domini Beats, and our closing theme is Sinister Cathedral by Asher Fulero. Please make sure to review our podcast on Apple Podcasts and let us know how we are doing. Coming soon, be sure to catch us live and on the air at Radio King. More details to come. Thank you for listening to today's episode.